The first case on the Northern Nevada panel's argument calendar today is Elizondo v. Hood Machine, case number 61229. Are counsel ready to proceed?
We are.
All right. Mr. Beavers?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Evan Beavers. I serve as the Nevada Attorney for Injured Workers. I'm here this morning on behalf of Carlos Elizondo, who is the appellant in this matter. I ask that I be allowed to reserve 3 minutes at the end of my time for rebuttal.
Great.
Thank you, Judge. This is an appeal of an administrative proceeding regarding workers' compensation case. Mr. Elizondo is the injured worker in this matter. The appellant was originally injured in February of 2000, lifting a heavy barrel of scrap metal while working in the back room of Hood Machinery in Reno. He suffered an injury to his abdomen. It was originally diagnosed as a left inguinal hernia, but after much effort to diagnose the case was closed with 0% permanent disability and was treated primarily as an abdominal strain. Mr. Elizondo has been trying to reopen his case practically ever since. This is the fourth effort at reopening that is before you this morning. When the fourth application for reopening came before the appeals officer...
Medical expenses were covered in 2000, is that right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The medical expenses were covered in 2000. It was
yes.
Treated as a covered claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
When the matter came before the appeals officer, this fourth application for reopening, it was dismissed upon motion by the insurer, the respondent here. And in that process of dismissing this fourth application for reopening, we've brought the case forward on the basis that there's a couple of errors that the appeals officer committed.
Well, before you get to that, when the fourth application was made, why don't you focus on the content of Dr. Ramos' statement or affidavit in support of the fourth reopening request?
Thank you, Your Honor.
And in that regard, could you tell me three things? First, what is the medical opinion? Second, what is the basis for causation? And third, have there been changed circumstances shown in Dr. Ramos's opinion from prior opinions tendered to reopen the claims?
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Ramos had offered opinions in the past in this case. As a matter of fact, you can see a continuum in the medical history here. When she first treated him or diagnosed him in 2000, she was of the opinion that she could not identify a hernia. Since then, she seems to have formed the opinion that the hernia has developed since then. And this most recent opinion letter that she offered and I must say, it never truly got treated by the appeals officer. It wasn't attached to the motion to dismiss. The appeals officer doesn't make reference to it, and it's very cryptic. But it seems to go to her medical opinion. She's had experience with this patient. She's reviewed the record. Her medical opinion seems to be even more committed to the idea that this change of circumstance, it's a hernia that didn't appear initially, and the primary cause is indeed the original injury. But it's not fleshed out, and that's one of the problems that we have with the case. It came from the hearing officer to the appeals officer, and the appeals officer treated this with a motion to dismiss. It didn't address the evidence, doesn't address it in her findings of facts and conclusions of law, and we were never given the opportunity to go through the process of discovery. The respondent, the insurer, before the appeals officer, did asked for leave of the appeals officer to conduct discovery. That request was granted, but at the same time, they also filed this motion to dismiss. So neither party really got much discovery in this case. Normally, and this is a bit off the record, but normally what we would do when we get a...
Well, I don't want you to go outside the record.
Yes.
If you could limit your arguments to the record, please.
My argument would be that we were not given the opportunity to develop Dr. Ramos' opinion, and I concede it is indeed cryptic at this stage of the proceedings.
Well, I understand your argument to be that there's a failure to comply with the Administrative Procedures Act and or a failure to show under 693-290 changed circumstances. But even if we assume that the appeals officer's order was summary in fashion or improperly adopted Hood Machine's motion to dismiss rationale, has the appellant in this case failed to demonstrate a record that provides a basis for remand?
There are three elements in the reopening statute. Change of circumstances, primary cause, and the third, of course, is a doctor certification of this change of circumstances. And I think he's met that preliminary threshold. If the question to me is, if it goes
how? How has Ramos met that requirement in this case?
Well, I think had Dr. Ramos' letter been tested by the appeals officer, it would have certainly have complied with that third element. The one that needs more development, more exploration, is the element of primary cause. And I would direct this court's attention to the order of affirmance that came out of this court last in 2007, where the court said, reviewing the historical medical record in this case and the evidence, that the change of circumstances seems to be proven, but the primary cause has not proven. And that's what this man has failed to do in each of his three previous efforts. And that's what needs to be tested in this fourth effort, and we've simply not had that opportunity.
Okay.
On the issue of res judicata, you'll see in our briefs that we cite the court to the Jerry's Nugget case. This court did not rule in Jerry's Nugget that res judicata does not apply to reopening cases. This court did give an opinion, though, on res judicata as it applies to workers' compensation and other requirements in the Nevada Administrative Insurance Act that goes to change the circumstances. And in that case, the court seems to imply that flies in the face of these common law defenses of res judicata, collateral estoppel, and issue preclusion, because the statutes that the legislature has handed down actually require coming back time after time, indeed for reopening, for this man's lifetime, he can come back and reapply. But if res judicata is applied, particularly in this case, it really muddies the water. What exactly is the claimant's burden when he comes forward the next time? In this case, the appeals officer simply, in her order, adopts the argument of the moving party, the respondent here. And so in order for us to determine exactly what is precluded next time, what is going to be allowed next time, we'd have to get it out of the motion itself and not so much out of the order. And given the fact that this man will be able, by statute, is allowed to come back time after time for his lifetime, we really need a clear recipe to follow, and we simply do not have that in this case.
And if does the statute offer that clear recipe? It says show changed circumstances.
No, but the statute that requires complete and explicit findings, facts, and conclusions, law would certainly give us that for future reference, and in this case, in his fourth application. So I keep falling back to that. I can't really answer your question because I don't have that material to work with, simply because the order doesn't include it. And the last issue that we raise really has to do with procedure and administrative proceedings, and that is there are really no rules as to what the standard is for a motion to dismiss. We argue in our brief that it really ought to be, because there's evidence offered outside the record. In this case, the movement did attach to their motion the order of affirmance from this court in 2007. If that's treated as outside the record, then perhaps we should use the standard of summary judgment. And if that's the case, then the moving party really need to show no genuine issue of material fact and a likelihood of succeeding. And that doesn't appear in the motion, and it doesn't appear in the order.
If the court agrees with you that the order is deficient in failing to specify facts, do we reach the question of the appropriate standard on remand?
I think you could. The issue in my mind is if any issues are precluded on remand. seems to me that it's incumbent upon the claimant to prove all three elements of 390. And the appeals officer would simply have to start over again and require the claimant prove with a preponderance of the evidence each one of those three elements. I don't think anything's been resolved at this point, if that answers the question, Your Honor. And I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Evers. Mr. McCarthy, good morning.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jim McCarthy. I'm here on behalf of Employers Insurance Company of Nevada. They're the insurer for Hood Machine. Hood Machine's not involved in this case any longer because it's such an old case that it has fallen off their experience. So I'm basically here on behalf of the insurer. The first thing I'd like to discuss is essentially that Dr. Ramos's reporting in 2011 is not new evidence. It's the same evidence restated. It's her opinion restated for about the fifth time, because back when we litigated this issue of whether the hernia, left inguinal hernia, was part of this claim in 2007 at the appeals officer level, Dr. Ramos had stated her opinion similarly to this 2011 letter in an opinion stated 1227 of 01, 417 of 2002, 10 of 2007, and then Mr. Ramos, in his pro per motion to the district court, asked the district court to consider Mr. Elizondo's petition for judicial review, asked the district court to review Dr. Ramos's opinion in 2008, January. I think that's what the court's order of affirmance here, back in 2007, addressed. Actually, it was an affirmation of dated 4-9 of 2010.
Well, isn't there a letter dated July 19, 2011 from Dr. Ramos?
There is.
That seems to be a little bit more explicit. The opinion states Elizondo has a definite left inguinal hernia. This hernia is a result of the original injury, and the claim should be reopened.
She does, and that's the same statement she gave and was litigated in 2007 when four other doctors said, we can't relate it to the industrial injury of 2000. This was two physicians who do vascular surgery on hernias, Dr. Devia and Dr. Held, and then two other general practitioners, Dr. Irwin and Dr. Drew, who both reviewed this along with the appeals officer's review of those opinions and concluded that the hernia was not related to the 2000 claim. That was the basis of our motion, was this has already been tried, litigated, and how many bites of the apple do we give Mr. Elizondo on his request for reopen?
Well, the statute appears to give him numerous bites of the apple as long as he lives, subject to his satisfying the requirements of that statute. I'm concerned and would ask you to address the absence in the appeal officer's order of any analysis of 693-290's requirements.
Well, 616C390 requires that the claimant prove that there is some change or worsening of condition related to the original industrial injury and for which treatment is recommended.
Shouldn't the appeals officer state why the appellant didn't do that so we have a basis for reviewing it?
I think that she did by adopting the motion that was made, the facts and statements of facts that were not disputed in the motion that was filed before the appeals officer, pointing out that on three different occasions prior to this, one other appeals officer and this same appeals officer concluded that the hernia was not related and were affirmed both at district court and at the Supreme Court that the hernia has not been, by any physician, related to the industrial injury to the degree that it meets the parameters of 616C390 for reopening.
What do you make of the language in 233B125 that states a final decision must include findings of fact and conclusions of law, comma, separately stated. Does that statute mandate an independent statement by the appeals officer in their order of findings that they find from the record, as opposed to an incorporation by reference of a party's motion?
Well, clearly the appeals officer's order in this case adopted the motion and the reply by the insurer, my motion that made before the court to dismiss the underlying appeal. I think it's sufficient if, as long as those motion and reply provide the appeals officer with a factual statement with an argument on the law that the appeals officer then can either reject or accept. And applying 233B standard to it, by the adoption of the motion, the appeals officer's order accepts the factual statements in the motion as well as the law argued in the motion.
Is there any authority that allows the appeals officer to do that? I mean, 233B-125 is very specific and contains a lot of musts.
I understand.
And it says what it says.
I don't believe that there is any statute that or authority that gives the appeals officer the right to just automatically adopt it. Yeah. But I don't think it's a fatal error in this case simply because of the fact that this case has been tried. The issue of whether the left inguinal hernia is related to the claim has been tried at least on three prior occasions before the Department of Administration, and in each of those prior occasions, the claimant was not able to establish the causation nor the relationship.
But the failure to comply with the statutory requirements, is that something that we as a body want to encourage these appeals officers?
I don't know that you would want to encourage any failure to follow the statutes, Your Honor. I couldn't espouse that myself.
How do we view the order of April 9th, 2010? I was on that panel. I was the presiding justice of that panel where we said, here, although the record contains medical evidence confirming the presence of a left inguinal hernia in 2002 and Dr. Susan Ramos opined in 2002 that the hernia was related to the original injury, none of the medical reports that were properly before the appeals officer concluded that appellant's original injury in 2000 was the primary cause of the hernia. I know it's an order. How do we treat it now with this panel? The only person on this panel who was on the other panel is me. And now how do we treat this order? Because what's the difference between this order and the findings of what the panel found in of April 9, 2010, and where we are today with this case? How do we view this order?
I think that the order stands as the law of the case, that the claimant has never been able to and did not in his original appeal all the way to the Supreme Court establish the requirements for C-616C-390 reopening by establishing a relationship between the inguinal hernia and his 2000 claim.
And there's nothing new between April 9, 2010 and when Susan Ramos again did the evaluation when all the hearings took place. Is there anything different?
The only thing different is the date on Susan Ramos's letter in July of 2011.
I'll be asking other counsel that same issue as how we view this order when he gets up for rebuttal.
I think my brief with respect to the court's findings in Five Star Capital, the application of res judicata to administrative hearings, has to be the law of the case. If it's not, then we open up reopenings to any number of continued litigation, continual ongoing litigation for any reason, whether it's been tried before or not. And so we end up with a Department of Administration whose decisions don't mean anything because we have to come back and redo them a year later.
I know in civil law we try to, at least this court has always tried to say we like finality, yet recently we had a divorce situation where there was no finality, and years later the people wanted to reopen the case and did reopen the case. Should we treat workers' comp different than we treat regular civil matters and not have finality?
I don't believe so. I think there should be some finality, and I think that if we don't apply some finality to the appeals officer, our final determination, whether it's at the appeals office with no appeal, at the district court, not appealed up to the Supreme Court, or with an appeals officer's decision, I think if we don't apply some finality, then the cases are open ad infinitum to continuing litigation. Mr. Elizondo could, 20 years from now, in each successive year, file a request for reopening based upon Dr. Ramos's letter, whether it's restated, whether it's a new date on it. He could file those ad infinitum, and we'd be litigating the cost of litigating that every time by calling witnesses.
But shouldn't the issue in subsequent filings be resolved under the provisions of the statute and the requirements of 616C390 rather than the doctrine of res judicata? That's really the question here in the context of workers' compensation. Should not the appeals officer say, in response to the fourth request, that the appellant has failed to demonstrate a change of circumstances, or nothing's changed, as Justice Cherry has characterized it from the time his panel looked at this order?
I think either way would be satisfactory because
there's a marked difference in the factors under both. It seems to me that the statute contemplates, unlike the family law setting, continuous applications to reopen if you can show changed circumstances. That's what the statute seems to allow.
But you're skipping changed circumstances primarily related to the original claim. If you skip that second portion...
I'm not skipping anything. I'm saying you've got to come forward and say that. But that's a lot different than the five factors in Five Star under res judicata and issue and claim preclusion. Quite a bit different.
I would agree, but I think the five-star standard is much higher than the 390 standard. But if the appeals
that's my point. I think the legislature contemplates that an injured worker can continue to apply under a lower standard if it can show those changed circumstances and different circumstances relating to the original injury.
Again, and the legislature also tried to rein in that continual oppressive reopening requests by limiting the amount of reopening in various stages of the reopening statute. The current statute says if you have a final order, you can't request reopening for 1 year from that final order on an appeal from an issue like this.
Well, it might not be applicable in this case, but in asbestos cases, for example, as medicine evolves, certainly injured workers who develop cancer have identified causal relationships much later in life. Isn't that what this statute contemplates?
No, I don't believe so, because we're talking about a reopening statute versus claim compensability or acceptance statutes. I think in the reopening genre, if you've attempted to reopen for a body part or condition and you're denied on the basis that you couldn't establish causation, you couldn't establish a relationship to the original industrial injury under the primary cause standard in 390, then you are forever barred because you've previously litigated that. You had your opportunity, and that's our position, Your Honor, with respect to the five-star capital case. This gentleman has litigated this not only once, but on three separate prior occasions, one of which came to this court.
So you wouldn't interpret the statute's comment with regard to change of circumstances to apply to new evidence concerning primary cause?
Well, I think that if the new evidence, I don't believe it does, Your Honor, simply because of this. If the new evidence is merely a restatement, like Ms. Ramos or Dr. Ramos said in this, a restatement of your prior opinion, which has already been heard, then I don't think it meets that standard. And that's basically why we filed this motion. I think if
I'm tendering a hypothetical,
if the doctor does come in with clear evidence and there is supporting medical support for the causation, clear and convincing evidence of, evidence of a worsening of condition that can be related medically, then possibly it is subject to reopening.
I just don't know what the meaning of the term change of circumstances would be if it weren't interpreted in that fashion. If you were to allow the physician to state, since the original opinions, this information now suggests this was the primary cause.
Then you'd have doctors second-guessing all along continually, and if they didn't get their approval for the surgery they wanted to do, you'd have them reissuing their opinion, Your Honor. And honestly, we'd have to come to some point where the case doesn't qualify for treatment of a condition that hasn't been proven as being related. I see that my time is almost up, Your Honor, if there are other questions.
Thank you, Mr. McCarty. Ms. Beavers?
Ms. Beavers, if you'd be so kind as to answer my question as how this panel should treat my former panel's order. And is there anything different between what happened in 2010 and then 2011 when Dr. Ramos did another letter, which I think said the same thing as the 2010 order we talked about?
Certainly, Justice Cherry. I have in front of me the order of affirmance, which you helped author April 9, 2010. At the bottom of the first page, it says, there is no dispute that appellant's, Mr. Elizondo's, circumstances have changed since his original injury in 2000, and that there's now evidence of his left inguinal hernia. What is in dispute is whether the 2000 injury is the primary cause of the hernia. The opinion closes by pointing out that Dr. Ramos opined in 2002 that the hernia was related to the original injury, but none of the medical reports properly before the appeals officer concluded that the original injury in 2000 was the primary cause. So I think one of the curiosities in this case, and we continue to talk as well we should about change of circumstances, I think what's a moving target in this case is this primary cause. And I think that's the other side's strongest argument, is if you don't have primary cause, the change of circumstances doesn't need to come back. But I see a development in the doctor's opinion as the primary cause, and I see it in Dr. Ramos' statements. I cannot read your order of affirmance from 2010 is saying what is in dispute is whether the 2000 injury is the primary cause, and no evidence can ever be presented to show what the primary cause is.
Well, first it was related, at least when we did the order in 2010, but now before this panel, we have a doctor saying that it is the primary cause.
Correct.
Well, wait a second. Okay, I guess I'm a little confused here, because in the 2010 order, it indicates that Dr. Ramos had indeed indicated that it was her opinion this is the result of the original injury. Is that correct? From the previous letter?
She does indeed. She did back then say it was related.
The exact language was as a result of the, it's her opinion that this is the result of the original injury, right?
Correct.
Okay, so now I'm looking at the July 2011 letter that you says that you feel is much more explicit and pertains to the original cause. I don't see that in there.
And Justice Perigary, that's exactly what we would like the opportunity to develop. You know, these opinion letters from the doctors that they give their patients in order to get them through the workers' compensation system, by the time they come through the hearing officer, they get to appellate or the appeals officer, we generally get the opportunity to develop those opinions through follow-up opinion letters, depositions.
But I guess my question is, after going through all these previous hearings and having this doctor express specifically that it's her opinion that the this is the result of the original injury, having an opinion come out in 2010 saying, no, that's not enough, why specifically, I guess the question in my mind, why specifically will she not state that this was the primary cause of the change in circumstances pursuant to the statute?
I've not asked that question ever, so I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't say that to be evasive, but I...
Okay. No, I understand.
This issue came up earlier in argument about the change of circumstances versus primary cause in the previous determinations. I go back to the idea that what these previous decisions said was that the evidence that was before the appeals officer, the district court, this court, previously were insufficient. They can't be read to say at no time can there ever be evidence to support it? Law of the case simply doesn't have application where a case is renewed, started over, every time a new opinion letter comes in. I don't know how you would apply law of the case in these circumstances of reopening. And Jerry's Nugget doesn't go to reopening, but it does go to change the circumstances for determining compensation benefits. And in that case, the court struggles with this idea that legislative intent to allow people to come back, have another bite at the apple, if you call it that. But they have a statutory right to do so throughout their entire lifetime. And during the development of medical science, lots of things may change. Indeed, this very discussion we're having on primary cause could change with medical evidence during the course of Mr. Elizondo's lifetime. I'm really sympathetic to the idea that there should be finality in judgments. The difference is in district courts, they're courts of general jurisdiction. They have broad authority over the parties and the issues, and that simply doesn't exist in administrative hearings. Anything further?
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Leader. Mr. McCarty, thank you very much for your arguments and your briefs. The matter will stand submitted. We appreciate your presentations this morning. We'll be at ease while counsel for the next case come forward.